a Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're embarking on, well, a really fascinating exploration. We're looking into a text that feels incredibly relevant right now, even though it's thousands of years old. We're diving into Thomas Hitoshi Proxima's translation of the Kuril.
That's right, the legendary Tiruckural by the ancient Tamil sage Tiruvallavar.
Exactly. Imagine this, a 2,000-year-old Tamil classic. It's got, what, 13,330 couplets?
That's the one, crafted by someone often depicted as, you know, a humble weaver.
Yet it presents this complete philosophy for living a meaningful, ethical, and fulfilling life. So our mission today is to discover how this isn't just some ancient artifact.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more like a living blueprint, almost a shortcut, really, to being well-informed on a cornerstone of world wisdom, and hopefully revealing some profound insights for your modern life.
Yeah, and that's precisely the captivating point, isn't it? This isn't just history class material to study from afar. Proxima's work really brings it alive, highlighting that the Tiruckural is, well, a universal guide.
Universal how?
To ethical and joyful living. It transcends time, geography, even specific religious beliefs, really. It cuts straight to that fundamental human question. How do we live a complete life?
Complete meaning.
Meaning one that beautifully integrates personal virtue, genuine worldly success, and intimate love. It powerfully challenges our modern tendency to sort of compartmentalize these things.
Right, like work life, home life, spiritual life are all separate tracks.
Exactly. The Kuril argues they're not in conflict, but actually deeply interconnected, mutually reinforcing even.
But that integration sounds incredibly appealing. And, you know, part of what makes this translation so vital for us today is the translator himself, Thomas Hitoshi Proxima.
Mm-hmm.
He's not your typical academic, is he?
Not at all.
He's a poet, an author, a performer, with this really unique multicultural perspective. His journey involves spending several years immersed in Madurai, deep in South India.
Right, in the heart of the Tamil-speaking region.
And he didn't just study the language from books. He absorbed the cultural nuances, even got into Carnatic music.
Yeah, that deep hands-on immersion is key.
It allowed him to capture the very sound and rhythm of the original Tamil, which is crucial because the Kuril is, at his heart, like, profoundly poetic.
Absolutely.
He calls his approach poet to poet.
Which means?
Meaning he's translating the spirit and the experience of the original, not just a literal word for word thing. That's how he conveys the concision, the musicality, the philosophical precision, and just the soul of those original seven-word Tamil couplets.
It's a real game changer for accessibility, isn't it?
How so?
Well, many ancient texts, especially poetic ones, can feel distant or even, frankly, a bit dry in literal translations.
Yeah.
But by focusing on that poetic essence, the rhythm, the spirit, Proxima really bridges that vast linguistic and cultural gap.
Makes sense.
He makes this ancient wisdom feel vibrant, relatable for a modern global audience, but without, you know, dumbing it down or losing the depth.
Right, keeping the beauty.
Exactly. And the Tiruckural itself, it's structured quite meticulously. You mentioned the 13,330 couplets, the Kurls.
Yeah.
They're organized into 133 chapters, and these chapters then fall into three major themes. It provides a really holistic guide to life.
Okay, so with Proxima as our guide and understanding his unique approach, let's really unpack the masterpiece itself.
Yeah.
Because here's where the Kuril reveals its monumental ambition, this grand blueprint for life,
mm-hmm.
structured into three fundamental books or aims of human existence.
Yeah.
The text calls Paul's.
Right.
First, there's Aram. That focuses on righteousness, virtue, the foundations of ethical personal conduct.
Oh, no.
Sort of sets the stage for how we act.
Okay.
Then we move to Pural. That tackles wealth, material prosperity, but ethically. Principles for governance, economics, social life.
Practical stuff.
Very. And finally, Inbem, the realm of love and pleasure. Specifically looking at human relationships, particularly romantic love and marriage. It really takes you on this complete journey, doesn't it? Starting inside with inner cultivation,
mm-hmm.
then moving outward to your role in society, and finally landing in those intimate joys.
And what's so insightful about that structure, that tripartite structure, is how it directly challenges that artificial separation we often make.
Between spiritual and material.
Exactly. Between our spiritual lives and our material lives. Tiru Vallavar, the author, basically argues that true wisdom has to address all aspects of human experience. It's about living an integrated life.
Integrated.
Where virtue, prosperity, and love aren't competing priorities. They're complementary. They reinforce each other.
So you can't really succeed in one by totally ignoring the others.
That's the idea. It suggests this profound interconnectedness. You simply can't achieve lasting success or deep happiness in one sphere by neglecting the others.
Okay, let's dive deeper into each of these three pillars then. Because the advice, as you said, is remarkably detailed, practical even. Starting with Aram, or virtue. The Kirol begins with, like, cosmic order, then dives right into foundational virtues for just daily living.
Like what?
Well, compassion, obviously. Which Tiru Vallavar equates with Ahimsa, that deep concept of non-violence.
Mm-hmm. Non-harming.
Right. And even an early nod towards vegetarianism.
Yeah.
It covers cultivating knowledge, gratitude, self-control. The importance of generous hospitality.
Hospitality comes up a lot in ancient wisdom, doesn't it?
It does. What's particularly striking in Aram, though, is how it blends the sacred and the secular. We talked about domestic virtue, you know, the practical ethics of a generous family life, which lots of traditions emphasize.
Sure.
But then also ascetic virtue, which is more about deep inner work, conquering anger, understanding reality, developing this profound empathy for all existence.
So not just for monks or ascetics.
Exactly. The Kirol argues this inner discipline is the source of true strength for everyone. It integrates spiritual practice into everyday life in a way few other ancient texts really dare to.
Okay, so moving on to Poral, the section on wealth and material prosperity. It's astonishingly pragmatic for an ancient text. I mean, the advice is still remarkably applicable to modern leadership, whether you're a CEO, a manager, or even, you know, leading a small team.
Give me an example.
Okay, on leadership itself, it outlines qualities for an ideal ruler that sound really contemporary. Things like emphasizing learning, listening to wise counsel, governing righteously, actively avoiding tyranny.
Sounds like good management practice today.
Totally. There's even practical guidance on how to test and trust your advisors or ministers and the importance of decisive, timely action.
Wow.
And for statecraft, economics, the Kirol discusses ethical acquisition of wealth, the fundamental importance of agriculture and trade, even ethical taxation principles.
Ethical taxation, huh?
Yeah.
It even touches on military strategy, but always stressing that ethical standards have to be maintained. It's this really comprehensive guide to acting effectively and ethically in the world, showing how a prosperous state is built on the well-being and moral character of its citizens.
And then we arrive at Inbam, Love and Pleasure, which you said is maybe the most unique section, and lyrical.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
It's structured almost like a poetic dialogue between lovers, charting their relationship right for the beginning.
From the start.
Yeah, it explores the intricate psychology of love. Starting with that clandestine courtship, the first meeting, that burgeoning desire, the ache of longing.
Ah, the early days.
Right. Then it moves sensitively into the complexities of married love, discussing the pain of separation, the sweetness of reconciliation after a fight.
Oh, that's relatable.
And the profound comfort of shared intimacy. This section is so beautiful because it affirms sensual and emotional love.
It doesn't shy away from it.
Not at all. It sees it as an integral, beautiful part of a complete human life. Handled with dignity and tenderness. Not something to be, you know, denied or transcended. It's deeply human.
It truly is. And what's fascinating is how these three sections, Aram, Poral, Inbam, they weave together. They reveal these universal, timeless threads that go beyond specific cultures or eras.
Like what kind of threads?
Well, one big one is its universal secular morality. The Kirol's ethics don't really rely on divine commandments per se. Instead, they're rooted in a deep understanding of human nature, societal well-being, principles like compassion, truthfulness, justice. They're presented as universal requirements for humans to flourish.
Makes sense. What else?
Another key theme popping up constantly is the primacy of compassion and nonviolence, ahimsa. This is held up as the highest virtue, and it extends beyond just physical harm.
How so?
To benevolent thoughts, gentle speech. It argues that true strength lies in the power to help, not to harm.
That's a crucial observation. And tied right into that, I guess, is the power and responsibility of speech.
Absolutely central.
The Kirol continually advises on speaking truthfully, kindly, usefully. And it warns vehemently against slander or harsh words. It really highlights how words possess this immense lasting power, often far beyond any physical injury.
Yeah.
And underpinning all of this seems to be the idea of wisdom as the foundation of all success.
Yes. both theoretical knowledge and practical understanding. The Kuel emphasizes that both are absolutely essential for success in, well, pretty much any life endeavor.
So, okay, what does this all mean for you, the listener tuning in today? This isn't about lofty, unattainable ideals, is it?
Not at all.
It feels more like tangible, actionable principles for a life well lived. Whether you're a student, a leader, a partner, a friend, it applies across the board.
Indeed. It's about seeing these virtues not as abstract concepts, but as like practical tools for navigating life's complexities. The Kuel brilliantly highlights the integration of spiritual and material life, arguing that prosperity, when it's ethically acquired and managed, can actually support spiritual growth, not hinder it. And it continually stresses social responsibility and ethical leadership, reminding us that those in power, whether they're kings or CEOs, have this profound duty to serve others, not just themselves. It's a truly holistic view of human flourishing.
The Kuel is just packed with these memorable lines, isn't it? Each one a concise nugget of wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Very quotable.
Let's look at a few that really resonate. For example, how about this one? What is born of water but fails to flower is like a great learning that fails to serve the world.
Oh, that's good. Kuel 393.
Right. It really hits home the importance of applied knowledge, doesn't it? Learning just for its own sake isn't quite enough. It has to blossom into something that benefits humanity.
Use what you know.
Exactly. Or this powerful image. A wound made by a spear will heal. A wound made by the tongue will never heal. That's Kuel 129.
Ooh, yeah.
That's such a stark, profound reminder of the lasting impact of our words. Just think about a time a careless comment or a harsh judgment stuck with you way longer than any physical scrape.
Mm-hmm, we've all been there.
The Kuel, thousands of years ago, was already highlighting how emotional scars can run deeper than physical ones.
It gets right to the core of human experience. And consider this slightly paradoxical one about giving.
Okay.
The wealth of those who give with love will never diminish. The poverty of those who do not give will never end.
That feels counterintuitive, but also deeply true somehow.
Right. This profound insight suggests true abundance comes from a giving heart, not just hoarding stuff. It's a powerful challenge to conventional thinking about wealth.
Definitely.
And maybe one more from the love section in BEM, this tender insight. Though I might find a medicine to keep me from forgetting, I won't, my friend, for the pain of my love has its own sweet savor. That's Kuel 1210.
Wow. That's quite striking, isn't it? It captures that almost paradoxical human thing of cherishing even the ache of a deep connection.
Yeah, that bittersweet feeling many of us know.
It shows the Kuel isn't just some dry ethical code. It's profound work that understands the full spectrum of human emotion, even the painful parts.
Exactly. The nuance is incredible.
So, okay, given all this wisdom, how can we, listening right now, apply these ancient principles in our lives today? It's ancient, but feels urgent.
Mm-hmm.
For personal growth, maybe we can embrace the Kuel's emphasis on self-discipline, learning to manage anger, cultivating genuine gratitude, practicing thoughtful decision-making.
Practical steps.
Yeah, like before speaking, maybe adopt the Kuel's implicit questions. Is this true? Is it kind? Is it actually beneficial? Just pausing for that split second.
That alone could change a lot.
I think so.
Yeah.
And in our professional life, the guidance on kingship, as you called it, translates perfectly into ethical leadership, right?
Absolutely.
It's about treating employees fairly, considering all stakeholders, not just shareholders, making wise strategic choices, building effective, harmonious teams.
It's a framework for creating a just and effective organizational culture, whether you're leading a huge company or just a small project team.
Makes sense.
And this extends beautifully into our relationships and our civic engagement, too.
How so in relationships?
Well, for relationships, friendships, marriage, family, the Kuel offers really profound guidance. It emphasizes pleasant speech, active listening, and even understanding that quarrels, when they're handled with care, can actually lead to deeper intimacy and connection. They aren't necessarily the end of the world.
That's a relief.
Right. And in civic life, it truly emphasizes social responsibility, giving back to the community, seeing our role in society as one of responsibilities, not just rights.
Shifting the focus.
Yeah. It provides this powerful framework for ethical decision making in a really complex world, encouraging active ethical citizenship that aims to build a better society for everyone.
So wrapping this up, what's the biggest lesson maybe to carry forward from this deep dive into Proxima's The Kuel?
For me, it's this powerful affirmation that ethical living isn't just you know, possible. It feels absolutely essential for true happiness and lasting success.
Mm-hmm.
Virtue, prosperity, and love. They aren't competing goals pulling us in different directions.
Right.
They're intertwined, mutually reinforcing aspects of a well-lived, integrated life. And this raises an important question, I think. The Kural, especially through Pruksma's translation, demonstrates that these ancient wisdom traditions, when we approach them with openness and careful study, they offer incredibly sophisticated guidance.
For right now.
For contemporary challenges, exactly. So it invites you, the listener, to consider, how might adopting this kind of integrated view of virtue, prosperity, love all together, how might that fundamentally shift your approach to daily decisions and even your long-term aspirations?
Well, that's to think about.
It really is. It's a complete blueprint for human flourishing that remains profoundly relevant today.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.